Just look at the fucking bums you hang around with.
What is nothing?
Now that's deep.
What in the fuck are we doing here?
What is something?
That's deep, bro. To That's Deep, Bro. I'm your host, Christina P. Thank you for downloading this episode of That's Deep, Bro. I have so much to get into with you today. I'm very excited to get back to the show. This is my favorite thing to do. Hello, is talk to you. Ow! Oh, mother of fuck! Oh, I just hit my kneecap. Is there anything worse in life? No, there is. Oh, fuck your mother. Anyways, let's start with some business. Firstly, I'm doing stand-up September 22nd and 23rd in St. Louis Tits, Missouri at Helium Comedy Club. Come out and see me do stand-up if you live there. October 3rd, Nashville, Tennessee at Zany's Comedy Club. October 4th, Charlotte, North Carolina at the Comedy Zone. And then October 8th, Your Mom's House live in Sperm Vine, California. So definitely, please check out my live dates. Yeah, there you go. Okay, let's get into it, guys. I didn't get my song ready. What's wrong with me? I like Modest Mouse. I'm in a Modest Mouse sort of feeling this week. I gotta be honest with you. I am always honest with you guys. I do feel a little heavy this week. I've had some dramas. I'll get into it, but let's do, oh, this is the song I like. Okay, guys, here we go.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Watch your mind, and I know that I miss you, and I'm sorry if I dissed you.
All right, there you go, Modest Mouse.
And a paper of plane.
I like that song. It's called Trailer Trash. Yeah. Anyway, hi, thank you. Welcome to my YouTube channel. If you're watching me, I'm on YouTube. Channel's called Christina P. I had an email request asking for back episodes I guess a lot of times iTunes will only put a certain number of episodes up at a time. And if I unlock all the past ones, like if I override that, what's going to happen is you will be flooded with a bunch of new downloads. If you subscribe to the show, which I hope you do, you'll be flooded with back episodes, and I don't want to screw up your iPhone storage because we've made that mistake on your mom's house. So if you would like to listen to previous episodes that I've done on That's Deep Bro, go to thatsdeepbropodcast.com, and there's a page under listen, click on listen, and there's an RSS feed. That's what that's called, RSS feed. Click on the RSS feed link and it'll take you to the RSS page, and that has every episode ever of That's Deep Bro from the very, very beginning, so you can go back and binge listen, because I've been getting emails from people that have been binging the show and they want to go back into the vaults, back in the beginning of this show. So there you go. Shit, man, I forgot to plug my Amazon. Hey guys, if you're shopping for the holidays, which I hope you are, do it using my banner. Go to thatsdeepbropodcast.com, click on the banner at the bottom of the homepage of your shopping as you normally would. Just kicks back some change to the show. I highly recommend using Amazon for the holiday shopping. Why are you, you know, if you're traveling to meet your family, don't you dare buy a ton of packages and fly with packages. Are you crazy? Do you know what the TSA does to you, by the way? If you try to carry on boxes that are wrapped, you're going to be read the riot act. They're going to go through all your stuff. Don't risk it. Instead, just shop on Amazon and have it shipped to the person that you're visiting or whatever. It's just so much easier. And use my banner. Come on, Canada. I got Canada. I got the UK. I got the United States. That's all they let us do. Sorry, other countries listening. There you go. That's the business. Okay, so listen, I got to be honest with you guys, as I am on this show. That's what this is all about, because I can't stand bullshit television shows, bullshit podcasts. I have fucking zero tolerance for small talk, unless it's ridiculous, like On Your Mom's House, where but we're very honest on that show too. There's not a lot of bullshit on Your Mom's House. I've had kind of an emotional week. I went through some stuff with someone. I'm not going to get into the details because it's kind of irrelevant at the end of the day, I think. And to make this relatable to people, I don't want to talk about details of life, but, something happened and at first you go through kind of a shock of something, and then I, you know what I do, I don't know if you do it, I like to really ruminate over stuff, go over it in my head and really, really hammer out the angles and get extra neurotic, and just turn over every leaf and rock and nook and cranny of everything. And it's so exhausting. And I've learned over time that the reason I do that, it's not because I'm super, you know, philosophical, analytical, whatever. It's that I don't want to feel the feelings associated with whatever's happening. And rather than feel stuff, I like to ruminate and just really intellectualize the problem or the situation or the thing or the blah, 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 blah. And so I really made an attempt this week to feel stuff instead of think about stuff. And I have to say that, you know, I really hate feelings. I've been raised to hate feelings. My parents were, you know, not, we weren't like a touchy feely household. I don't, you know, and so it's very much a challenge for me to do that. But you know what? I decided, I was like, you know what? I'm gonna get old school on this, on the sadness of what's happening here. I'm gonna instead of getting angry, because I do get angry at fights, we all do. I was like, you know what? The truth of it is, I'm actually really sad that this is happening, or that X, Y, and Z has occurred. And I think they say in psychology or whatever that anger is just like repressed sadness about stuff. And I was like, I'm going to go old school on the sadness right here, bitch. That's what's up. I'm going to dig up some Sisters of Mercy. I'm going to listen to some Marianne. I'm going to put on some dark clothes. I normally wear black, but, I'm just going to sit in it and I'm going to see what happens. And I think for a lot of people, myself particularly. The thought of like allowing yourself to be bummed out is really scary. I think a lot of us are afraid of feeling stuff because it's like, well, where does this rabbit hole go? If I allow the sadness, if I allow this to, if I allow these feelings to come, what will I do with them? How will I contain them? How will I be a mess? Will I not be able to, you know, get out of bed? Will I be crippled? Will I be unable to do my work? And this and that and here's what I found. And I don't know if you've ever had somebody close die. Excuse me, but a weird thing happens when someone dies, and that's like, you, for a minute, you take a break, obviously, from life. Like, oh, I don't know how long you take. It's up to you. But there is a point where you go back to living when somebody close dies. And it's very surreal to be like, wait, I'm just supposed to go and get in the car and go to work and buy groceries and cook breakfast for my family. Yeah. Yeah, you do. But you do it carrying the sadness a little, you know, and you kind of go, it's the same with performing. I don't know if you're a performer, but in stand-up, look, the half the battle of being a stand-up comedian is about being funny, but like it's that most of the time you're not going to feel like it. And if I did stand-up when I felt like doing stand-up, that would be, I do one show a year. The real battle with being a comic or a performer is that you do it anyways. You do it in spite of, you do it carrying whatever it is that you're going through. It's not like life is always in these ideal conditions and then you're like, great, I'm gonna go do a show now. Sometimes that does happen and that's amazing, fantastic. But in my own personal life, I've had really horrendous things happen. And then coming to the stage is Christina P and you're like, oh my God, like I've had severe medical things going on and I've still performed. I've had, you know, very emotional, traumatic things personally happen. And then, you know, you get up and you perform. Now, does that mean that you push everything down and you suppress the feelings? No. In fact, what I think creative people learn to do is you channel that sadness into something positive. You can actually channel these emotions into something productive. You know, if you're a writer, that's sitting down and writing. And I think so many times we go, but I can't be creative if I have something fucked up happening. I can't be creative if, you know, the sky is falling right now. And, you know, there are really no ideal conditions. And the same goes for when something sad happens in your life. Like, so the point is I kind of just lived my life this week and I allowed the sadness. So I lived and I allowed the sadness to kind of walk with me. And I didn't push it away for the first time in my life. Like, I'm really good at pushing away, you know, sad feelings. And I thought, well, let's just do an experiment and let's really marinate and let's go. Let's put on some Bauhaus and let's get weird. So I'm out of it now. It took about, you know, 4 or 5 days of just kind of being in a weird place. And I feel okay now. And what's happened is acceptance of this particular situation that I'm in, acceptance. And I think some wounds, honestly, the reason I tell people to go to therapy is not that all your life's problems are going to be fixed and you'll never be sad again. And it's going to make your life perfect. It's not that. It's that there's always going to be certain things, right? You're always going to have wounds. There's always going to be something that's there, but at least it's managed and it's contained, and you have the tools now to navigate through life. Like I was talking to somebody about, well, what separates resilient people from less resilient people? Because I've known people that are like have been through things that I couldn't even fathom. Right? Like, don't you know people who have just been through the ringer, and then you talk about your life with them and you're like, I can't even believe I'm bringing this up. I'm sorry. I know that you've been through like horrible, horrible stuff. You know, you compare your tragedy to their tragedy and decide that your tragedy is way inferior, which isn't right, by the way. Everybody has their own dramas and tragedies to live out. But what was the point? Oh, the point of resiliency is that I think one of the keys to being resilient, is it genetic? Yeah. I think certain people are predisposed to being more resilient than others. But I also think there's an ability of resilient people to kind of go with the flow a bit more. At least what I've witnessed is a real acceptance of what is fantastic in resilient people. I was having lunch with a friend yesterday who's been through some stuff with an ex. And I was like, oh, that's really, and she was talking about it very matter of factly, and it looked as though she had dealt with the feelings of it. And I thought, well, that's so cool. Like that's the trait that I'm, really fascinated by. Like you can go through something, it can bum you out, you can come through the other side of it, and you do that over and over. So it's not that we can't handle stuff happening, because stuff's always going to happen. You can handle it. That's the thing. You're learning to handle stuff better. You've got the tools to handle it. And that's when stuff goes wrong, is when we don't have the right tools to handle stuff. And then you freak out and get high and overeat and gamble and cheat on your spouse and burn it all down. And self-sabotage is when you don't process feelings right. So the whole point of therapy is to process feelings, is what I'm saying. And acceptance is a big one too. Oh boy, is that ever, you know, and part of, what I'm dealing with, part of it is the acceptance of what is, you know. I think, a lot of times I don't know if you've been in something with somebody and you're acting a certain way and they keep acting a certain way, and then they just keep acting the way they've been acting, and then you're surprised, right? And I'm like, oh no, why am I surprised? Why am I shocked every time? You know, it's like my dog Bitsy. She's not very bright. She's a purebred Brussels, which is my favorite, but not the brightest dog. And every time I take her, I take the dogs out to go potty together, and without fail, Bitsy knows the route. She knows exactly how we walk to the door every time. Without fail, that dog will get right in front of my feet every time. And then I'll have to kick her a little bit. Come on, man. You're Bitsy. And I have to, you know, reprimand the dog for being in my way. But she knows what's going to happen every time. And then she still puts herself in a position to get kicked. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's also part of this game of life, is like, oh shit, I'm about to get kicked again by this situation, this scenario, this thing. I better get out of the way. And that comes from a radical acceptance of what is, which is, again, I think part of being resilient and part of the battle of all of this life, right? Of life, because nothing is the same. Everything changes. And man, I don't want to be that dog getting kicked over and over. Fucking Bitsy, so stupid. What a dope. I had this wonderful epiphany this week too, watching my toddler, who has wholeheartedly embraced the word no. And I didn't know this about children. I don't know this. I didn't know nothing about child development before I had a kid, but I'm finding it really, really fascinating that one of the first words that a child learns is no. And one of the first things that little kids do is say no over and over and over again. No. Do you want to put on your socks? No. Do you want to have dinner? No. Do you want to get in the car? And no, no. And they even say no when they mean yes, because they're learning that they're separate beings and they can say no to stuff. And I was like, oh, fuck, I didn't even know that, man. Like, I didn't even know that was like an innate thing in humans, that we are hardwired from day 21. I don't know, whatever day that's month 21 where he's at, but you're wired very early to assert really firm boundaries with people. And then over time, those boundaries get eroded and you get, they're not honored by whoever's raising you. And then you learn to stop saying no. And then before you know it, you're a codependent mess and you're helping everyone else do everything. And then you're not taking care of your own self. And then you're getting resentful. So very interesting. That is one of the first things that we do as people is no, 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 no. And there's no, he has no problem saying it. he says it all the time. No, no, no. And I love it. I fucking love it because every time he does it, I was like, look at you. Look at you. That shit took me 10 years of therapy. 10 years in psychotherapy, you know, thousands of dollars to learn how to say no. Something that my 21-month-old has picked up just like that innately. No. No. Ah, man. We all got to get back to the no. That's the whole point of the show, right? Getting back to that primal no. You want to do that? No. You want to go work a job you hate? No. You want to get married to someone you don't like? No. You want to be overweight and hopeless? No. There you go. I just thought it was really, really interesting. And that's my goal, to get back to the firm no. And really to that sense of self. Because we all start off on this planet with a really, really strong sense of self and of boundary. See, at 21 months, my kid knows. No means I do my thing. I'm asserting my personhood, right? And what happens is a lot of times parents will override that stuff, you know. Oh, it's so heartbreaking. And you know what really makes me bonkers too? My kiddo, you know, he's seen his grandmother a few times. They don't live in the States, so they visit. And we were at the beach, and his grandmother offered Ellis a cookie. And Ellis was like, no, no. And he didn't want, as much as he loves cookies are the center of his universe, he didn't take it from her. And there was this immediate reaction in the family to chastise him for not taking a cookie from someone he didn't feel safe taking it from. And I was like, no, 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 no. Do not override this kid's no. He's telling you right now, I don't know you well enough to take candy from you, basically, to take candy from not a stranger, but not somebody I feel comfortable with. And I said, if you tell that kid now, like if you're overriding that inherent no, that's how you erode somebody's personhood. That's how you ruin that kid's sense of boundaries and self. Is like, no, you just let me override this. Let the well-meaning grown-up teach you, quote, manners, and do what you don't want to do. So I refuse to override my kid's innate sense of what feels right and wrong. And I was like, and I said, I love my mother-in-law. I absolutely adore her. And I was like, listen, I know it feels hurtful to you that this kid doesn't want to take cookie from you. I think this is fantastic. And I teach him all the time what a creep looks like. Don't even talk to that guy. That guy over there is a creep. That guy over there is a douchebag. I teach him all this stuff. And I, you know, you got to do it. Don't make fucking, I hate when it's go hug so-and-so, go tell them you love them. And you're like, but you don't even know them. Kid doesn't know. That might be their biological uncle, but he doesn't know that. Why am I going to force him to say I love you to somebody he doesn't even know? And I know it's social, and I'm sure I'm going to raise like an anti-social nutbag like me, but whatever, you know, I don't, maybe just, I don't know, call me crazy, but I hated that stuff when you were a kid and they told you to, you know, be nice to somebody. I don't even know this motherfucker. You fucking hug him. You think he's so great. And that's not to say I believe in manners, though. I mean, one thing that makes me bonkers is that kids don't say hi and goodbye and shit like that. That's, you know, basic manners. But hugging people, get your life. Fuck that shit. Okay, let's get into some emails.
You want to know why you're all fucked up?
Okay. You know, this one came in just yesterday, and it's one of those emails that really, really, I was like, oh, my little heart opened up and ached for this person. So I would like to read it to you. Okay. I'm a 35-year-old failed professional wrestler. Failure in the sense that I was never able to make it my full-time job and or earn an honest living doing so. I performed for 13 plus years, but retired last year for a month before my son was born. I decided I could no longer pursue my own dreams and risk my physical well-being as my family's lives depend on me being able-bodied and earning money. So here I am a year later after retiring. My son is about to turn one. I'm living with my girlfriend. I don't want to say where. And I'm working as a potato chip vendor, trying my best to make ends meet, but failing miserably. Money goes faster than it comes in, and I'm not sure what to do next. Anyhow, to the point, I'm just not sure how to cope with failing and not particularly having the option to try harder or try again. All I've ever wanted was to be something more than I am, but seemingly can't even be mediocre. Well, in hindsight, I'm sad I didn't pursue comedy and realize that I still could, but right now it seems impossible. The parallels between stand-up and pro wrestling are scary similar as far as paying your dues and totally losing money for the first several years. Do I just bide my time until I can pursue something else? Do I just accept that life is hard for everyone right now and move on? I'm lost and miserable, bro. However, am indeed grateful for all the things I have, like a happy family, healthy family. And then he writes, if you'd like to watch my last match, here's the link. This is fantastic. So he sends me the link and says, I hope you come to where I live. And then he encloses a picture of fantastic, fantastic. Okay. I have so many thoughts on this. What a shocker. First of all, bro, I suggest you read the book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck. I think that will be really good for you at this time in your life. Okay. So that being said, you're 35, right? And, I don't know. Can you wrestle past 35 anyways? I think had you gone pro, had you, you know, become Hulk Hogan, I think you wouldn't have, much time left on the clock to begin with. I'm not terribly familiar with the ins and outs of wrestling, but I don't think you'd want to be beaten up at 40 anyway. So put it that way. And secondly, are you kidding me? You're not a failure at all. You've done it. You did it. I'm watching a match of you on YouTube, and that you've gotten farther than most people ever would. And in my opinion, the failure is the person who doesn't even try stuff. Failures are the ones who are too chicken shit to even come up with a cool wrestling name and get in the ring, metaphorically and literally, with you. So you're definitely not a failure. And the fact that you did it, and it looks to me like you enjoyed yourself doing it, and it looks to me too like there's a kind of a natural time that you do have to stop doing something physical like that, because you don't want to be paralyzed and, you know, screwed up by the time you're 40. Sounds to me like you had a pretty great time. And a lot of people aren't able to do what they do creatively full time for a really long time. So I think I congratulate you on that. And then also, what is success really? And I think the number one thing you have to think about is, like, what do you define success as? Is it reasonable? You know, is it the multi-$1 million? Is it a yacht? Is it working a job where you have enough time to be with your family every day and just making enough money to, like, have basic needs met? I think that's number one. And that book, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, talks about what your values are. And that's, like, first and foremost, what do you value most? And then that's the gauge by which you measure your life, right? Look, you can compare yourself to, I don't know, sorry, I keep bringing up Hulk Hogan because he's, like, the only one that I really know. You can compare yourself to that guy who's, like, the one in gazillion super famous wrestler, who's managed to, I guess, have endorsement deals and other things. And that guy's career is, like, one a gazillion, right? Or, like, put it on a reasonable scale. Like, dude, you did do it, and you did it for 13 years, and you did it for, you stopped doing it for a great reason, is that you have a family. And, there's, you know, great. You did it all, in my opinion. Okay. So, but what do you do now? Okay. here's what I see, and here's what I've learned about all this stuff. Yes, there are natural physical limitations on pro wrestling. How do you deal with the failure of not being able to do it again? Because you can't. Okay, let's be honest. Like, unless there's some geriatric wrestlers league I'm not aware of where they encourage people to break their hips and stuff, you know, it's just not going to happen. But here's what I glean from life in general. It's like, sometimes when you can't get the exact form of the thing you want, there's a reason. I think there was a time in my career where I wanted really badly to be like an actor or a host or something. And I was like, but I was always kind of, I always missed the mark on it. You know what I mean? Like, whatever it was, I wasn't right. I wasn't really suited for it. But I knew that there were essences, parts of the thing I was shooting for that I inherently liked. So what I mean by that is, I would look at the elements that you really liked about wrestling. There has to be something in it. And is it the physicality that you enjoyed? Was it the performative aspects that you enjoyed? Was it the shit talking? I don't know. Was it the choreography? Was it, what is it? And I would glean the essence of it, right? Take the morsels of what you really enjoyed. For instance, this is a perfect example. For so many years, like, I was on a reality show a million years ago called Road Rules. This is in the 90s. This is before really the internet, before anything. And my whole life, I always said, I wish I could just fucking make a living being myself. And I said that in the 90s, and this is before podcasting came along. So it took a long time before this thing called podcasts came along. And now I can make a living being myself, saying crazy stuff on the internet. And like, it just took, you know, a couple decades for the technology to meet up with the essence of what I really, really like doing, which is this: talking shit, talking to everyday people about stuff that matters. Okay. So, I think in the past, I'd be like, I think I want to be an actor. Like, not really. That's not the essence of what it is. Not that I don't enjoy acting and stuff every now and then, but it's not really the core of the joy that I felt. The joy is for me, like, connecting with people, talking about shit that matters, talking about things people don't normally talk about. Like, I like that. And it just wasn't available until podcasts came around. So I don't know. My advice to you, like, it sounds like, and also I think a lot of people don't, what a lot of people think is like, well, I'm going to quit this thing and then I'm going to leap into my second career. And there's not going to be this interim where I have a day job that I may not love, but it's paying the bills. So I think be thankful for the chip vendor. Is that what you do? The chip vendor business that, yeah, it's barely covering your ass right now, but it is paying the bills. And you know, when I was in my crummy day jobs, I always was thankful for the crummy day job, because you go like, yeah, I'm not going to be here forever. I know that. And you know that, right? Like, you're not going to be the chip guy forever. This is kind of a stepping stone to whatever it is you're going to be in the future. So be thankful for the paycheck that's keeping you afloat now as you plot your exit and you plot your way into the next whatever next form of employment you will have. Maybe it's coaching something. Maybe it's, can you teach other people to wrestle? That's kind of crazy. I don't know. Maybe you could open up a fucking pro wrestling school and teach people how to like build a wrestler's persona or whatever. Maybe it's starting a YouTube channel on wrestling. Maybe it's starting a podcast about wrestling. Maybe it's, I don't know. You know, maybe you're the guy that sells wrestlers memorabilia online and makes your money that way. Like, there are so many ways to make a living now because of the internet. You're really not limited that way by your physicality or where you're located. So I don't know, man. I don't think you failed at anything. I think you kind of would have to have transitioned into something else at your age anyways. Yeah. And no, don't accept life is hard for everyone and move on. No. Yes, bide your time until you can pursue something else. Absolutely. Be thankful for the chip job. Go in with a great attitude every day and thank your lucky stars you have the job that brings in the money to keep your family alive. In the meantime, on the weekends, on your free moments, plot your way out. Plot your way to the next thing. You know, find your way, dude. But I think you sound like a fucking winner to me, dude. The loser is the asshole who stays in the crummy town around the same shitty people and then talks smack about you doing the thing you're doing. The loser is the one who is hateful about what you're doing and is telling you what a piece of shit you are and how dare he think he fancy. Yeah, well, maybe you are fancy. those are the losers, by the way. And I've learned that time and time again. Don't listen to the losers. Listen to the fucking winners, bro. Fly with the eagles. Don't fuck with them. Don't fuck with them turtles, right? Isn't that what T.D. Jake says? The turtles are on the bottom. Fuck with them turtles. Go with the giraffes. The giraffes eat the higher leaves. Okay. So this is great. This is for Gina. This email came in. There was a girl in the last episode, or in 135, who had all these symptoms. Like, it was like eczema and then, you know, kidney problems. It was like all these problems. And so this person writes in, I hope you can forward this message to Gina for me. Around the same age, 23/24, my body started to fall apart. I had tons of symptoms and saw numerous specialists to figure out what was going on. My whole family thought I was just a hypochondriac and didn't believe something was actually wrong. Heart palpitations this person had. My primary care physician decided to test for celiac disease, and guess what happened? I tested positive. Now many people think that celiac only causes intestinal problems, but that couldn't be more untrue. Celiac can cause acne, rash, weight gain, brain fog, mood swings, joint pain, high blood pressure, and many more. So Gina, get tested for celiac. Why not? Not a science, not a doctor, Patrick. Yeah, I know, right? Hilarious. Who knows, dude? Who knows? Okay, so this is kind of on the heels of the last question. Okay. My name is Daniel. If I can read your name. Okay, yeah. My name is Daniel, and I am a 19-year-old electrician's apprentice. Great gig. I've always said I fucking love people that can do stuff like that, like practical stuff. Part of me for a long time wanted to quit comedy and like learn how to change people's oil in their cars or like paint houses or do their electricity, right? Because you're always going to work. That's a thing. You're always going to, or be like a handy woman. I'm a handy man. You're always going to work because fucking dumb idiots like me can't do anything. I'm a 19-year-old electrician's apprentice. Over the last couple of years, my patience for school has gone down significantly and I dropped out of college. My parents, after realizing I was very unhappy with my situation, understood and accepted my choice, but told me I have to start working full time. That's good. Those are good parents. So I got a full-time job working for an electric company. Okay, I don't mind working there in the beginning and actually enjoyed it. I find it very hard to find the motivation to work now. I love music and I've been obsessed with playing guitar and songwriting for a few years now. While I'm at work, all I can think about is playing guitar and writing songs. Then when I get home, I stay up until the AM playing guitar, which really makes it harder for me to get up and work in the morning. And I often find myself pacing back and forth around the shop, writing song lyrics or listening to music I recorded the night before instead of doing work. My parents and other people always tell me how great of an opportunity my job is and how lucky I am. And while I appreciate the opportunity, I don't enjoy doing this job. And I think I'm scared I'll never be happy working a regular full-time job. I feel like a shithead because my parents are always telling me that I'll have to do music on my days off and working is what adults do. I don't want to be the old man who played it safe and is always dreaming about what could have been. I'm coming to the realization that my reality doesn't have to be everybody else's, and I will have to suffer in certain aspects of my life so I can thrive in others. So my question is, when did you realize you had to sacrifice a stable source of income for what you love doing? And how did you make the leap towards that decision? Okay, thank you. Keep getting your life high and tight. Okay, mommy, this is such a great question. I'm so glad. I feel like we've been getting this. This is the flux of emails. So, Daniel, your parents mean well. Let's start with that. I think any parent that tells you to stick with a good job is not trying to spirit crush you. They're not trying to stifle your creativity. It's not personal. Just know that I think parents, the intent is like, hey, dude, you want to be a musician? You and everybody else get in line. Here's the thing. If you have a trade, you can fall back on it. So it's a practical thing. And also kind of an ideal thing for you. What you're doing right now is exactly what you should be doing in order to pursue the music career. I think a lot of people watch The Secret and, you know, listen to Tony Robbins and they misunderstand the inspirational message of you can do anything. You can be anything. Quit your day job. They take, you can do anything. You can manifest anything as a literal, just stop your day job, stop your stream of income and go start your business. And that is just not practical financial advice. You know, we all love Oprah and I love all these inspirational folks. And without them, I would not have gotten to where I think I am today, but know that there's a whole space in between getting what you want and starting. So do not poo-poo the day jobs, my little boo-boos. Never poo-poo the income that is allowing you to breathe easy and to sleep at night because you're not starving and you're not homeless. So keep the day job. And it sounds to me like you enjoy what you're doing. I think being an electrician is like a fucking awesome gig. You can always work when you're in between music gigs. Maybe you end up being like in a band and in the beginning, you know, you tour and then in your off touring seasons, you do electrician work to pay the bills. Many, many bands have done that where, you know, you're not touring. So how do you make money? That's a huge thing. So this is a great skill that may carry you through your music career for a while until you're making so much money that when you're not touring, it's not so detrimental. But like I said, the misconception is like, I'm going to quit everything. I'm going to stop everything. And I'm going to throw all my energy and resources into this new thing. And because the universe will provide and I will take leave of faith, it'll all happen and everything perfect. No. At least in my life is not how it worked. I had a day job for many, many years, longer than I thought I would have to. There was a point where I was on Chelsea Lately, like once every two weeks. And I still had a day job. And I was like working in this office where I was on television the night before and somebody would come in and be like, didn't I just see you last night on Chelsea Lately? And I'm like, yeah. And I was answering phones and stapling things together and you know, filing mail away and doing errands. So, and that wasn't that long ago when you think about Chelsea Lately for me was like 2010 or something like that. So, hey, and it took a long time for me to become a full-time comedian, full-time podcaster, many years. So for some people, yeah, does it happen quicker? Absolutely. I don't know where I fall in terms of like how quickly it happens, but be thankful for the job that's not that inspiring. And I'll tell you why. I did the same exact thing. I go into my day jobs and I would literally sit there with my notebook and write jokes in between answering phone calls. And I would also take my life experience that I had at these jobs and turn them into comedy. Because guess what? You're only going to be a better artist with life experience. Surprise! Not everything is gleaned from the internet, the interwebs, I was going to say. Not everything, not all of human existence is rooted in this. There's a whole world of actual things that can happen and interactions that make you a better musician, writer, comedian, artist, whatever it is you're doing. You have to have the meat and the dirt and the sweat and the sadness and the joy of life, all of it, in order to be a better communicator, to tell your story more effectively, etc. So, I mean, what's the alternative, Daniel? Just quit the electrician thing and then I'm a full-time musician, guys, I'm 19. Like, here's what you do. Here's what I would suggest you do. Learn as much as you can about this electrician business. Get really good at that. So now you do have a skill to fall back on. I, for a long time, I was doing search engine optimization. There was a time where I learned how to do that stuff. And so I
had one client or two clients, and I was a feature act, and that supplemented my income. So I would spend, you know, X amount of hours a week doing search engine optimization, which wasn't my dream in life, but I got a paycheck from that, and I was able to, you know, keep working. It's the hustle, dude. It's the hustle, and it's a long game. I don't know any business owners or any successful people who are like, I quit my day job, the next day I'm a millionaire doing the thing I've wanted to do. So it is a process. And the self-help gurus, the Tony Robbins and the whoever's of the world don't want to tell you that. It's a long game. It's a marathon grind, especially if you're in the arts. It's a self-generated marathon. And it does have to be, you have to be a self-starter, you know, self-motivated, because you're waiting for your mommy or your daddy to tell you to go out and make music or art or whatever. Good luck. It has to come from in you, and it's a long haul. So I think it takes a long time, boo-boos. So keep doing your music. And when you're at your job and you're bored, think of your songs. Why not? Think of that. Go join. I don't know what kind of music I am assuming. I don't know. I think it's rock. Start a band. Get in a band. Meet your other bandmates. Now's the time. And practice your music in your off time. But have that paycheck. Always have the paycheck, boo-boos. Don't just stop and assume that the creative endeavor, well, it'll just work itself out. Not all the time. And you can't be that creative when you're hungry and you're terrified of how you're going to pay the bills. That's just number one. I was always hustling for the check to pay the bill so that I could sit down and write jokes. You know what I'm saying? Even at my brokest, there was always, I knew like, all right, dude, I've got this thing, the side hustle. you have your side hustles, man. You got to have the side hustle. You walk some dogs, babysit. Now with the Instacart, I have millennials constantly delivering Postmates, Instacart, all this shit to me. Drive for fucking whoever, Lyft, Uber, whatever. There's all kinds of side hustles now. So, and then there will come a time, and here's the thing. So there will be a time when you make your leap of faith. That's the big time, right? Here's the problem. So you're right. There's all this in between of like having your side hustle, and then in your off time, you're doing your creative endeavor. And then there does come a time where you have to take your leap of faith. And a lot of people miss that window. And the leap of faith usually comes in your 20s or your early 30s. Okay. Now, can it not come later in life? No, but it's easier then before you have a family and a mortgage, etc. Thank you, Bitsy. The leap of faith occurs when you've been at this game long enough, you have enough contacts, you know that you know enough about the business, and you have enough gigs, you know, lined up or whatever it is that you can make most of your living. Maybe not even all of it, but just cover 60% of your life with the creative thing, okay? But still have your side hustles going, and that's when you take the leap of faith, or maybe 50-50, I would say. 50% is the biz, 50% is your side hustles. And that's when you take your leap. That's when I did it on there. And then fucking hold on. Hang on tight, dude. Because then it really gets real, right? And then your back's against the wall, and that's when you'll make decisions. But stay in the incubation as long as you can of having some kind of a day job until you really feel confident that you can make a living. I mean, when I quit my full-time job to be a full-time comedian, I had a great day job. I was a writer. I was head of development at a company. I was 28 years old. Well, was I 32? 32. When I stopped and became a full-time comic, actually. But I was a creative person. I was a writer. I was making great money, benefits, you name it, everything. And I was like, nah, I can't do it. Quit. And I quit. But it's when I had stuff lined up, guys. It's when I had like prospects. It wasn't like just blind faith. So anyway, there you go. Yeah. When did you realize you had to sacrifice a stable? Yeah. And here's the thing. If you're a creative person, The thought of a 9-to-5 just isn't for you. You know that. You won't be doing it forever because the inclination's so strong to get out of it, you know. And surround yourself with people, friends, who support you. I can't tell you enough how thankful I am to have people like Tom. And I'll always be thankful this girl, April Macy, who brought me out as her feature act. And she was really pushing me too. And a bunch of other friends and people encouraging me along the way. Like, I'm telling you, dude, sometimes when you can't muster up the courage to do something, if you have a friend that can, like, pull you along, that is worth its weight in gold. So surround yourself with people who are hustling too, you know, and don't listen to the haters, man. Fuck the haters. Don't listen to those scared little chickens. They're just scared. They're scared most of the time, haters. Scared because, you know, they have to look at their own stuff that they ain't doing, you know what I'm saying? You feel me? What I'm talking about? Okay. Okay. So you don't have to choose between your art or your job, but you do have to do both simultaneously until you're stable enough to take the leap of faith. Okay. Oh, and save up money. Get some savings before you do take your leap. That's another huge one. I had a lot of money in the bank when I became a full-time comic because I knew that it would cost, that I would be poor. And I made a lot of money doing that great gig. So I had a lot socked away. So when I came out making nothing, I had a cushion. So just try to mitigate. And also it's also very individual how much anxiety every person can take. For me, it was pretty small. So I made sure to have a lot of money socked away. I made sure to keep my costs of living very low. I always kept a real small life so that I knew that my monthly nut was really low when I was starting out. You know, don't go renting the nice house or the nice cars and shit when you're broke, man. Get that shit later when you got your money. But yeah, keep everything kind of manageable. So even if you have a lean month, it's not going to like totally kill you. So there you go. I hope that helps, little boo-boos. And your parents are not going to often be the source of inspiration for stuff like this only because they are terrified that you're going to fail and they want the best for you most of the time. And that's why they're telling you to do the practical thing with your life. It's just because it is safer. Let's be real. Being an electrician is probably a lot more stable than being a musician, but you know, it's your life. It's your life. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You're going to wonder what if. That's the failure, is the wonder of what if. The failure to me is the person who is sitting there going, someday I'm going to write that great novel. Someday I'm going to, if only I had the time, if only I had this and that. It's like, there's never perfect time. It's never good. Nothing's ever optimal for you. I mean, even before I fucking sat down and do this podcast, I won't go into detail, but there's a million things that I probably, you know, I had to deal with that. It's like, just prioritize. You got to prioritize. Shit. Yeah. Okay. This is a family question. Very interesting. This person writes, when I was very young, my parents split and remarried, gifting me with two half siblings and two step siblings. During this time, my mother also went to prison. Yuck, in parentheses. Due to all of this instability, I have always been the fixer in my family and have always tried to create as much stability in my own life as possible. My siblings have always depended on me to fix their issues as well as my own. I have recently been gifted with three nephews and niece from my siblings. I absolutely love my niece and nephews and have always wanted a bunch of kids of my own. However, my boyfriend and I found out that we will probably never be able to have kids of our own. Consequently, I have thrown myself wholeheartedly into being an aunt and getting my life so that we can adopt one day. Fantastic. I work for an amazing company and have been able to work my way up from a part-time cashier to now working in the corporate office and making a grown-up salary. Fantastic. I'm 24, of the youngest of my siblings. When I told my siblings that I got a huge promotion, their reaction was to tear me down. I hear a lot of, well, we can't all be as lucky as you. I take great offense to this as I worked really hard to get to where I am in both my personal life and my career. However, all of my siblings have kids and are working part-time, if at all. When I stand up for myself and push back even a little, they take away my time with my nephews and niece. I am being blackmailed by these emotional vampires. My boyfriends and parents are always there to build me up and bring me back to reality and my successes after my siblings bring me down, which is all that keeps me sane. So how do I take care of these emotional vampires without alienating my wonderful nieces and nephews? Any words of wisdom? Thanks. Yes. So here's the reality, my love, is that these are your nieces and nephews. These are not your biological children. And even though you might be a really ideal parent for them, maybe more so than their own parents, you're not unfortunately, the end all be all, the decision making person in their life. So what you're going to have to do if you want to spend time with them is to play by the rules of the parents. And what that means is deflecting a lot of their negative stuff. So, you know, let's say and it's also not bringing up the stuff that you know they're going to crap on. Let's say you get a promotion and you're super proud of it. You don't want to bring it up to them because you know what they're going to do, right? You know they're going to be haterish. They're not going to celebrate you. You're going to be met with dog shit reactions. So don't bring it up. You know, you can't get blood from a stone, right? And as I was saying at the top of the show, is that, you know, we have to also accept what is and the limitations of certain people in our lives. And the fact is your siblings, for whatever reason, have resentment, envy going on, maybe about what you got. And that's just it. And there's nothing you can do about it. You can't control them. You can't change them. So we must accept their limitations. And if you want to hang out with your nieces and nephews, you're going to have to eat shit a little bit. And if they say something snippy, you know, you can say, well, thank you for your opinion. That's when I hear that you're supposed to say to narcissists and stuff. Oh, well, that is your opinion. Or thank you. Thank you for your opinion. you know, avoid the topics that you know will make them shitty. And you have to play by their rules, unfortunately. And don't look to them for emotional support or for any kind of just whatever, you know, keep it minimal. Talk about the weather. Talk about sandwiches. Talk about lollipops. Talk about whatever. Don't talk about real shit with those people. That's the thing. You gotta be pick and choose who you give your real stuff to, right? Ugh. They ain't worth that. Nasty. They ain't worth it. But yeah, you're gonna have to eat shit a little bit and tolerate the a-holery if you want to see your relatives. And you're going to adopt your own. So that's exciting. You know, that's exciting. So, yeah, look to that. Okay, one last one. Ay, ay, ay. This one came in. Oh, no, I don't want to do that one. That's too long. Sorry, guys. I changed my mind. I did. I changed it. Ay, ay, ay. All right. It's too long. That's too long. Okay, here it goes. Hi, Mommy. She writes, this woman writes, I was diagnosed with BPD a few years ago, and after a lifetime of extreme emotional instability, that's borderline personality disorder, BPD, failed relationships and overall unhappiness. 3 years ago, I was deep in the shit. Lost my job, lost love of my life, was evicted, suffered a miscarriage in the span of 2 months. And then after that, I got help. After completing an extensive dialectical behavior therapy program, I am happy to report that I am well on my way to getting my life. I have a great apartment, great friends. I've repaired relationships with my family and even started my own business, a clothing line. My jeans are higher and tighter than they've ever been. For as long as I can remember, I've always hated kids and never wanted them. They just aren't for me. But since the miscarriage of the unexpected pregnancy, I've wondered what having a child would do to me mentally and how having a BPD mother would affect a child. People with BPD are at a high risk of relapse while pregnant. And quite honestly, I'm not sure bringing another life into this world is worth potentially risking mine and undoing all the important work I've done for my mental health. Also, is it responsible to have a child knowing I have a mental illness and that I may not be the best parent for that child? I am fairly certain my own mother has undiagnosed BPD and she refuses to accept. And how she treated me growing up has made my therapist a rich woman. I am leaps and bounds more emotionally regulated than she is now, but I would never want someone else to feel the way I did growing up. After a lot of soul searching lately, I've realized that this is a true reason I don't want kids. As someone who grew up with a BPD mother, I wonder what your take on my outlook is. Should BPD women have children? I love to know what the real personality champs thinks about this. It's not sexual. Ashley from London, Ontario. Oh, home of the beef. That's right. I am an Ontario person too. I'm from Windsor. There you go. So you're asking a general question. Should BPD women in general have children? That I don't know. You know, I think borderline personality disorder, from what I understand, is a really, really difficult thing to treat. It takes a long time and you have to be consistently in treatment, from what I understand, for it to really make an impact. And it sounds like that's fantastic that you've undergone a lot of the work involved in overcoming borderline personality disorder. It's very difficult. So I think what you're really asking is, should I have a kid? And, you know, and here's the thing I would say, you know, as someone who did have a borderline mom, it was really, really bad, really rough. My initial reaction would be like, no, don't, please God, don't, because it's a lot. And, it's a fucking lot having a borderline mom, but you, okay, we're not talking about everyone in general. We're talking about you. If this email were to say, I've always wanted children, it's my burning desire. It feels like it's beyond my control. I can't help this need. 'Cause I'll tell you, you know, for me personally, I don't know how other women feel about it, but like when I knew I wanted my kid, it was like this weird, primordial pull towards it. Like it was out of my control. It was like my brain flipped a switch and my body was like, I have to be pregnant right now. Like it was just this primal need to have a child. There was no logical mechanism overriding that whatsoever. And I don't know if that's for everyone, but that was for me. I just very much knew that I wanted to be a mother. So, and I think that's a really common fear with people who have mental illness. If you grew up even with a narcissistic mother or an alcoholic parent or parents with any sort of mental illness or like severe dysfunction in your house, the fear is, and a lot of people don't really say this out loud, I don't know why, but the fear is, oh my God, I'm going to pass this on to my kid. What if I'm the same way to my child that my mother was to me? And that's a totally valid fear, because that's what fucking happens to people. Okay. That's why people are in prison, and that's why motherfuckers are, you know, doing drugs and wanting to kill themselves, because it goes untreated. This mental illness gets passed down to generation to generation. And, you know, that's why everyone's fucking out of their minds. So, yeah, you should be worried about having a kid. That's great. The fact that you're even sending me this email means that you're cognizant of it and that you've got the help. Great. If you can maintain this mental health thing that you've got going, if you can promise to me and swear on pinky swear and swear on the Bible that you stay in therapy, maybe you could have a kid. Yeah. But if you're not, I mean, again, this is contingent upon you really staying in the programs and really staying connected to a therapist who can deal with this stuff because it comes up. It all comes up. Anyway, the point is, I too had the same fear because my mom was a borderline. I myself am, as far as I know, I'm not. No one's told me that yet. But that was a big fear too. Like, am I going to pass on the crazy? And which is why I'm in therapy and why I work through a lot of my history to make sure that I'm not doing the same stuff unconsciously. And this is not to blame people ever. It's all unconscious. It's all an unconscious process. You know, it's not, no one's actively trying to screw over their kids. I don't think not. I mean, yes, there are evil douchebags, but for the most part, we're unconsciously doing the stuff that was done to us, and voila, there you have it. But yeah, mental illness, addiction, I don't know. Like that's a tough call. That's a real tough call. But for you, I would say ask your shrink if you can. I would ask your therapist. Don't ask me. I'm just a fucking douchebag comedian with a crazy mom. I don't know. Ask your shrink. That's the right answer, right? Oh my God. Ask your therapist. Now, that's not to say that people with borderline personality disorder can't have a structured, meaningful, productive life. From what I understand, if they're treated, the key is treatment and pretty early in life. You don't want to let it go untreated until they get older and it's really far gone. If you can get treated, yeah, your life will get way better. And if you can be medicated, you know, great, even better. Ugh, man, that's the whole struggle, isn't it? Just not doing to other people what was done to you. I feel like that's the whole goal of this, man. I'm just trying to stop the patterns. Trying to get my life so that my babies get their lives. My dogs, my child, everyone else gets their life. So there you go. All right. I think that's it, guys. Email me. That's deepbropodcast@gmail.com. If you have any questions, that's deepbropodcast@gmail.com. Come see me do stand up in those cities I mentioned at the top of the show. St. Louis. I'm doing Charlotte. What's the other one? I'm doing Nashville. We're doing Your Mom's House Live in October. Is it October 8th? And yeah, that's it. All right, guys, until next time. That's been Deep Bro. I'll see you next week.
Now what? I don't know. Philosophize with.
It's Christina P, aka Miss Jeans. This ain't your mom's house. It's a different theme. Gotta be critically thinking. Like you caught up at a cocktail party, our thoughts start to sink in. John Locke, or was it Socrates? Aristotle or Plato, maybe Hippocrates. Got us talking all properly, topically. Just a comedian discussing these philosophies. Serious questions, silly people. What's that? That's deep, bro.
It is the ultimate metaphor for life. And you know what that is?
What?
That's deep, bro.